When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We had called ourselves Ranger. We were, you know, playing shows around the Bay Area called, you know, we were called Ranger. But then right before we were getting ready to release our Dawn Patrol album, which they printed up 10,000 copies that just said Ranger on the Dawn Patrol Ranger, you know what I mean? And so we're just getting ready to do that, and we opened up a Billboard magazine, and there was a band called the Rangers, and they had had the name, yeah, huge, big thing, country band. And they had the name, their fathers had the name, their grandfathers before the American Civil War had the name. I mean, it was like, they've had it forever, and we're like, this is horrible, this is bad. But we had the song Night Ranger on the album. We'd written the song Night Ranger on the record, so we said, let's just put Night on top of Ranger.
And
I called up Kelly, and it was like, Kelly, we'll just put Night on top of Ranger, it'll be fine. And Kelly's like, this is a horrible idea, this is terrible. No, we should just do it. And he says, yeah, okay. And I'd hang up the phone going, this is a terrible idea, this is horrible, this is gonna destroy everything. But we did, we put the Night on, and it's the best thing that ever happened.
You're listening to The Growing Up Rock Podcast with Stephen Michael and Sonny Hollywood Pooney. Now, crank it up.
Well, Sonny, we made it to 2024, and this year it's time to kick off a brand new album series. Let's not keep the people waiting any longer. This year, we've decided to cover one of your Bay Area favorites, one of my favorite bands all together, and we're talking about Night Ranger. Are you excited about this album series in 2024, Mr. Hollywood?
I am, because there is a whole middle piece of their discography that I have not heard in a while. I'm a little scared and excited at the same time, because I kind of cherry picked a couple of songs a few days ago, and I was like, ooh, that's going to be very interesting. It won't be Def Leppard slang interesting, but it'll be interesting.
No, I have to agree with you. And out of all the bands that we've done over the course, this is our fourth year doing this, I would say that Night Ranger is probably the, I guess, lesser known of everything that we've done, because we've done some massive bands, right? With Van Halen, Def Leppard, last year celebrating the 40th anniversary. So the 40th anniversary covered a lot of bands, some very famous, some not so famous. But Night Ranger is one of those bands where you sort of know the name. Everybody knows Sister Christian, but I think what people are going to find out, especially those that aren't as familiar with Night Ranger, is that the band is so much more than Sister Christian. I'm excited to dig deeper into some of those lesser known albums that you talked about, the Neverlands and the Sevens and Feeding Off the Mojo, records like that. As much as I am revisiting these earlier records in the band's history. So I think this is going to be a fun series. We've got a whole lot of different guests lined up for the entire year, some that have been with us throughout the course of all 4 years and all four album series. And then we've got new folks. And joining us on this debut Dawn Patrol Night Ranger album that kicks it all off, we've got two new people to the podcast, and I'm excited about that. We've got Josh and Brent from Fans in Motion podcast, which is an all Night Ranger podcast. And from what I understand, it's the podcast we didn't know we needed, Hollywood.
Yeah, it's the number one Night Ranger podcast in the world, I'm sure.
It's the only Night Ranger podcast in the world.
You didn't have to go there. It's still number one. You didn't have to go there.
Except for us at the end of every month this year.
That's right. <There you go.
laughs> Brent, welcome.
Welcome. Do you guys have Venmo accounts or anything like that you need some money sent over?
I use Cash App.
PayPal. Josh, welcome.
Listen, don't make me have the Night Ranger powers to be send you a cease and desist. We are the number one Night Ranger podcast out there, especially in the Tri-Cities area. So, you know.
Literally. Until the last Sunday of every month this year.
There you go.
Listen, a little competition is always good.
So, fellas, I'm super happy to have you guys on the podcast. I expect that you'll be able to fill in the blanks. And there will be a lot of blanks where Sonny and I fall short on our Night Ranger knowledge, or I just plain and simple get it wrong or pronounce it wrong. And that's the way it rolls here at Grown Up Rock.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of extra S's where there shouldn't be any S's. Trust me.
If we don't know the answers, we will make some up.
Our version of Steven is Josh, so I'm well accustomed to it.
All right. So all year long, we'll be covering 12 Night Ranger studio albums with a bonus one because they actually have 13 studio albums. Night Ranger, American hard rock band formed in San Francisco in 1979. You know the big hit, Sister Christian. Members Brad Gillis, Kelly Keegi, Jack Blades, currently Eric Levy on keyboards, and Kerry Kelly on other guitars. I've seen this band a lot of times over the years and even more recently, and they're a band that's out there and still kicking ass completely live, and I absolutely love it. So let's get into a little bit of each other's history with Night Ranger. I'll start with you, Brent. What's your history, not only with the band Night Ranger, but with Dawn Patrol in particular?
Okay, well, it's actually coming up on an anniversary, actually. I probably bought Dawn Patrol the week it came out.
Okay.
Seeing the video, Don't Tell Me You Love Me on MTV. I was familiar with Brad Gillis playing with Ozzy, and it was a great tune. So I went to a store called Record Theater, purchased the record, called our other co-host, Andy, who's not here, who's been a lifelong friend of mine. I'm like, you need to know this band. Well, a week later, Kiss tickets went on sale for Dayton, Ohio on the Creatures of the Night tour. And coincidentally, Night Ranger was opening January 9th, 1983. So I got to go to my first Kiss show, seeing a brand new band, and I knew every song on the album. I think I was probably the only guy there. That's the way you feel, you know, when something's new. And got to see Night Ranger on the Dawn Patrol tour. It was fantastic.
Nice.
Not to mention seeing Kiss in their last makeup tour with Sonny Poody's favorite Vinnie Vincent on guitar.
Oh, yeah. There you go. By the way, I love in your background there that you have Kiss Asylum. That's awesome. I love that.
That's top five Kiss record,
yeah,
in my opinion.
How about you, Josh? What's your story with Night Ranger in general, but then with Dawn Patrol?
So, you know, I'm a little bit younger than, you know, you old folks. You know, I was 5 years old when Dawn Patrol came out. You know, I was always into music. Yeah, that was probably 1983, Midnight Madness. My aunt, who was only 10 years older than me, and knew I liked music, came out. I'd been, what, 6, 7? And she's like, hey, there's a band I want you to listen to I think you'll like. And I'm like, leave me alone. You know, I'm playing with my Hot Wheels or something, right? And then the next day, you know, she was at school or it was a weekend or whatever, and she was gone. I went back and I found those two albums, Dawn Patrol and Midnight Madness. And I put them on and I'm like, what? You know, in my 7-year-old mind, what the hell is this? This isn't what I see on MTV, because I like to watch MTV, but it was Kaja Gugu and Cyndi Lauper. And, you know, even back then, I'm like, all right, I think this kind of sucks. Where's Wanted Man by Rat, you know? It was just something I hadn't heard before, and I was immediately hooked. I begged my mom, my grandma, take me go see Night Ranger at the Ohio State Fair. So at 8 years old, we waited all day out in the sun for a free concert, and I saw Night Ranger. So that's really how everything started with Dawn Patrol. I mean, those were my first two records, Dawn Patrol and Midnight Madness. Now, again, I was five when it came out, so I don't have, you know, the Kiss story and all that stuff like Brent does, but...
But we were both at that Ohio State show.
Yeah, and I was 8 years old.
So did you get Dawn Patrol and Midnight Madness at the same time?
Correct. Well, I stole them from my aunt, basically.
Okay. Did you notice a considerable difference in the two records?
Probably not much back then.
Yeah.
I think I gravitated more towards Midnight Madness.
Okay.
Those two albums, since I was, what, six, seven?
Yeah.
They have been with me basically my entire life. So just hearing it was life-changing.
And what's crazy is I'm 55 years old. So yeah, I cut my teeth on Kiss. I'm sure many of the people you've had on your show have. And Josh cut his teeth on Night Ranger. And what was it, Revenge, is when you finally got into Kiss?
When I started getting into Kiss, it was like the end of Hot in the Shade, but Revenge was my first album. I was 15.
Yeah. So, Sonny, how about you? What's your history with Night Ranger in general and then Dawn Patrol in particular?
Yeah, as I sit here today, you know, I live in Ohio now, but I grew up in the Bay Area. So I was in the Bay Area from 1980 to, what, 2021. I'm growing up in the Bay Area. I'm an MTV kid. I'm getting into music at 1984. Sister Christian's all over MTV. I'm looking for my bands because I live in San Francisco. So I'm getting into Sammy. I'm getting into Y&T. I'm getting into Journey. Being a Night Ranger fan probably was going to be a foregone conclusion anyway, because you're looking for that, right? And you would think that Sister Christian was number one in the world for the next 15 years because it didn't stop playing on Bay Area stations ever. Now, owning Dawn Patrol, you know, by the time I'm listening to Sister Christian, Midnight Madness is over and Seven Witches about to come out. By the time Seven Witches is coming out, I'm getting into like Whitesnake and Guns N' Roses. And so I don't really even super get into Night Ranger till Big Life. And I'm going backwards. So the first time I saw Night Ranger live, Tesla opened, 87, Concord Pavilion. We lived right near the Concord Pavilion, so I basically walked to the venue.
What Night Ranger tour was that?
Big Life, 87.
Okay.
Now, the weird part, very similar to Y&T, the weird part with Night Ranger is I really start going to a lot of shows starting 87, 88. Night Ranger is basically done by then. They're off the grid by the time I'm really going to shows. So one of my favorite bands of all time, I've only seen them 11 times, and I've seen them more after the 90s, after 96, than I saw them before 96, just because of the time frame of when I got into them. But if I would have got into them like in 82, 83, I'd probably see them 40 times.
So my history is more similar to Brent's. I knew about Brad Gillis first because of Speak of the Devil from Ozzy. That was the Ozzy record that really got me into all the old Sabbath. And so that's the first time I heard of Brad Gillis. And then I saw Don't Tell Me You Love Me on MTV. And that was the first time I heard Night Ranger. And that was enough for me to go out and pick up the album when it came out. So I picked up Dawn Patrol when it came out. I want to say I had the cassette. And I was sold. I was hooked. It kicked off with Don't Tell Me You Love Me and went straight into all the rest of the tunes. And yeah, that's all I needed. Now, I didn't see the band live because I grew up in a small town in Florida and they weren't opening any of the concerts in my region. So the first time I got the opportunity to see Night Ranger live was as a headliner on the Midnight Madness tour. They headlined a arena in Biloxi, Mississippi. And that was the first time that I got to see them live. I met the band out back by the buses. I think I got them to sign my Midnight Madness cassette that I still have. So that was my first opportunity in seeing Night Ranger. And then I've seen them probably, I'm like Sonny, I've seen them more, you know, once they got reunited and got back on the road. because they play so damn often nowadays. I've seen them way more now than I ever did in the early days, but I did see a headlining tour with Midnight Madness, and I did see they played, and I can remember this specifically, they headlined the Fox Theater here in Atlanta, which is a beautiful old theater, and they headlined it on the Seven Wishes tour. So I saw them twice on that Seven Wishes tour, if I'm remembering correctly. You know, my memory's a little fuzzy from way back then, but I saw them headline an arena, and I saw them headline the Fox Theater, and I thought they were amazing back then, because, you know, they came out of the genie bottle and stuff at the beginning of the show, and it was just, it was killer. So that's my most vivid memories and my early beginnings with Night Ranger. And then, you know, probably all in all, I've probably seen the band maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 times at this point. Over the years, I would guess.
Please make sure you hit that follow button to subscribe to Growing Up Rock Podcast so you don't miss an episode.
So let's get into some of the basic facts of this album. And Brent and Josh, I'll go to you for extra facts and fill in the blanks where I don't give enough. But the album was released in November of 1982. It was recorded in Los Angeles, California. The length of the record is 40 minutes and 30 seconds, which to me is, man, that's just a perfect length of an album back then. The label is Boardwalk, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes along with that record label Boardwalk, which we may get into eventually, but I'm not going to get into it right now. The producer is Pat Glaser, or Glasser, however you want to pronounce it, and he would go on, I think, to produce the next couple of Night Ranger records after this one, if I'm not mistaken. The peak position on Billboard's Hot 200 was number 38 for Dawn Patrol. I don't have the amount of albums that this record has sold overall, but I have to think that it's platinum at this point, but maybe, I don't know. I couldn't find the information as to how many it sold at this point.
No, even Midnight Madness is only platinum. I don't think they've gone back and had it recertified. My guess is Dawn Patrol would be platinum if they had it recertified. But everywhere you look, Midnight Madness and Seven Wishes are the only platinum records, and that's hard for me to believe.
I just figured that with the success of Midnight Madness, it may have pushed Dawn Patrol to at least gold or platinum. I mean, it did have Don't Tell Me You Love Me on it. I know they didn't have any other major hits on this record, and I wouldn't consider Don't Tell Me You Love Me a major hit, a rock hit, but I just figured the success might have pushed it over the line, as it does happen with a lot of bands, but that was it. The singles from Dawn Patrol are Don't Tell Me You Love Me, released in December of 82, Sing Me Away, which was released in April of 83, and then the last single released was Young Girl in Love, released in July of 83. So you can see out of that, Don't Tell Me You Love Me, they obviously had traction with that single because they didn't release another one until April, which is a pretty good period of time in between, and then Sing Me Away, I guess, didn't do what they expected, because again in July they ended up releasing yet another single. So they just never really got, I don't think, the traction they wanted from the singles off this first record.
Now, are you guys collectors at all?
I am not.
I can be.
You know, you're talking about the singles here. The 45 of Young Girl in Love is actually harder to find a standard copy, like a store copy, than the promo copy.
Wow.
There's more promo copies than actual stock copies. So if you're a collector out there, it's kind of reversed. Everybody wants the promos, but the stock copy is the one that's harder to get.
Which just means that was when payola was nice and big, and they pushed a bunch of promos out to stores, and you know, they could recognize the sales. That's okay. So before we get into the album cover and talk about the album cover and the back sleeve and everything, maybe it's important for us to understand how we got to this debut album, Dawn Patrol, because there were some demos and things that went around beforehand. If you don't know, the band basically originated from a kind of pop funk band called Rubicon out of the Bay Area, and that consisted of several members, but Kelly and Brad and Jack were a part of Rubicon, and then they went off when Rubicon disbanded and did their own thing, a band called Stereo. I know that Josh, you have some information regarding this original demo. You want to talk about that a little bit?
There's a couple demos. I mean, you just brought up Stereo. Stereo morphs into Ranger. Mm-hmm. Ranger morphs into Night Ranger. And some of these songs that are on Dawn Patrol will originate from Stereo. Now, they'll get Night Ranger-ized. You know, going into the record, when they are Ranger in 1980, they do a demo at Gary Peel's house, who Gary Peel, guitarist for currently Boston, but at the time he was Sammy's guitar player, Sammy Hagar's. And on that demo that they did, you know, were some songs that never made it on to Night Ranger albums. One song being, there's a song called Diary of a Madman, which kind of becomes Touch of Madness. Carry On, Sonny, from your Big Life record that you enjoyed. That was actually on an original demo called Mr. Carry On. They had a song called Tonight, again, Diary of Madman. Play Rough, Can't Buy Me a Thrill, which was Can't Find Me a Thrill. And then, you know, why it's kind of important is two songs that end up on Midnight Madness were actually written and demoed for Dawn Patrol. The first song Night Ranger ever wrote together was Let Him Run, which is the last song on Midnight Madness. And then the iconic song Sister Christian was written and demoed for Dawn Patrol, and they decided to leave it off along with Don't Let Him Run, with Pat Glasser basically telling them, guys, you're going to be run ragged for, you know, a couple years, and then they're going to want an album real quick. It's better to, you know, have some stuff here sitting there for the second record. So, you know, I just think it's part, you know, just interesting and, you know, part of the story that we're going to be talking about Dawn Patrol. And while all this album is being released and they're touring the world, Sister Christian is just sitting there.
Yeah. And originally, I may be wrong about this, but originally it wasn't called Sister Christian, right? It was called like Motoring or something.
Sister Christy.
Which is Chris, you know, Christine is Kelly's sister, younger sister.
Right. Okay.
And so he's singing Sister Christy. The guys are hearing Sister Christian.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it's Sister Christy. But you know what? Hey, that sounds actually pretty good.
Right.
And that's how that lyric kind of morphed into Sister Christy.
You know, the more and more I dig into various bands' histories, I start to find that this is a normal ongoing pattern with bands. They have songs that are in, you know, in the vaults or on demos that don't show up, if at all, till much later albums. I mean, Van Halen, notorious for that, right? Van Halen had songs that they were playing in clubs that ended up on, you know, 1984. So. Mm-hmm.
And one thing that can't be as overlooked in the history is how important Fitz was. Fitz was the name in the band.
Yeah, I know. That's hilarious. I didn't learn that till today. I really had no idea about his history till I started digging into some things. I found that out, and I found that very interesting, is that he actually had a name. And go ahead and tell us, what is the history of Alan Fitzgerald, Fitz?
Before Sammy Hagar was Sammy Hagar, you know, they knew each other. David Lauser, who's been on our podcast, told some great stories, was with, you know, friends with Sammy before. Again, Sammy was Sammy. And Sammy joins Montrose. The second record was Sammy, Paper Money. That's Fitz on bass. It's crazy to hear these guys talk about how great Fitz was as a keyboard player. They said he was an even better bass player. So he's a bass player on Paper Money with Sammy. Then Sammy leaves and they get, I forget his name, and he's on those records. Mm-hmm. And then he goes and he's in Sammy's solo band, 77, 78. He goes back to Ronnie Montrose. He's in Gamma, which had some, you know, mild success. He's on that first Gamma record. So when he helps form Night Ranger, you know, he's got these connections. And one of them is Gary Peel from Sammy's band. And they use his studio to record these demos. And then they use, you know, Sammy. You know, Sammy is some of the, you know, right after Brent saw him with Kiss, they toured early 83 for 2 or 3 months, I think, with Sammy. You know, Fitz was very important.
The other thing about Fitz that I learned today is that he went on, once he left Night Ranger, to play offstage keyboards for Van Halen. So, again, there's that Sammy connection. You know, the Sammy, the Montrose, it's all coming back and going full circle because he ends up in the Van Hagar band on tour playing keyboards off stage, which found, you know, extremely interesting. Did not know that.
He did the For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge tour. He's listed in the liner notes of the live record. He did Balance. And I think he also did some of the 2004 tour with Hagar.
All right, so let's move on to the album cover. We'll start off with you, Sonny. What's your thoughts on this album cover?
You know, the very large array being on the front of the album cover, and then it's like a picture with art added, and then the back of the cover is similar, right? It's a picture of the band with art added.
Yeah, they're being.
Which is weird. I don't have a problem with the album cover. I think, you know, it fits the Dawn Patrol kind of thought process. I think Alan, you know, standing in military position on the back of the album cover is a little weird, where everybody else is a little more relaxed rocker. Alan looks like he's ready to go into the military. But, you know, you got good-looking guys. If you're not going to put them on the front of cover, you're going to have to put them on the back cover, because good-looking guys in 1982 sells. I think it was a good album cover. I like that the colors pop. You know, it's, you don't normally see pictures with art added. That's not normal on album covers. So it's unique.
Yeah. Brent, your thoughts on the album cover?
Yeah, the album cover, it's pretty cool. I remember the satellite dishes you would see in people's yards. They weren't nearly this big. This is what, someplace in Arizona, Josh, I believe?
New Mexico.
New Mexico. Okay. Thank you. No, I think it's cool seeing all the satellite dishes. And I love how the rays are being shot off the cover to go to the back. You see what the rays, where they land. It's each member of the band. And, you know, it's different. I can give you a little origin story on how that came about, if you'd like to know.
Please.
Kelly Kagi was sharing with us that Joyce Bogart, of all people, going back to Boardwalk, we're not going to get into the Boardwalk stuff, but Neil Bogart, who owned Casablanca Records, started Boardwalk. And so they were having dinner, and Joyce Bogart says, oh, I got the perfect idea for the back of the album cover. We're going to put you guys in. Is it Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. They went to the woods there, and they were all standing on the red lights. This was all Joyce's idea. And that's the origin of the back of the album cover, which, you know, it's pretty cool. And Sonny, as you said about Fitz standing there all stiff, if you go back and look at pictures of 45 covers, he'll be standing sideways doing that.
Yeah.
It just, I think it was Fitz's thing of being different, you know?
Yeah. I like the album cover. I think it pops. I think what pops the most out of the album cover is that logo, the Night Ranger logo, which is still around. And in fact, it's the Fans in Motion logo almost, right? You guys made that into the Fans in Motion logo. One other thing about the Night Ranger logo, and it reminds me a lot of this, and I don't know if this is where they got their ideas, but as a kid growing up, before MTV, I used to watch Night Flight on USA and saw a lot of videos back then.
God,
on
you guys
Night
are
Flight.
Old. So old. Yeah.
And that logo for Night Flight is very reminiscent of the top half of the Night Ranger logo, right?
Steve, and I can't tell my Andy, the other co-host, Andy and I still quote Night Flight commercials. We'll do the this is Ian Hanna. You're watching Night Flight. And then you got Spinal Tap, and you hear, good night, Blight. Hey, we'll just do that. Stupid.
I mean, I saw some of the iconic videos on Night Flight before I did on MTV. Some really old, like Van Halen Dance the Night Away. And I think I saw Def Leppard Photograph on Night Flight before I saw it on MTV. But anyway, I dig it. I think it's pretty cool. Real quick, Josh, your thoughts on the album cover?
Well, the Night Ranger logo is different on the Dawn Patrol than it is on the rest of the albums. Now, they bring it back, you know, on a few other things in the 90s. But look at the R's on Ranger.
Uh-huh.
On the Dawn Patrol album, and then compare it to all the other ones, and you'll notice a difference in the logo. And then another thing probably needs to be mentioned, because they still talk about it in concerts now, is, you know, we all know that Night Ranger was originally called Ranger. There's a country band in Kentucky called the Rangers, who we actually found one of the guys and had him on the podcast. And so Ranger decided we need to be called something else so we don't get sued. They had the song Night Ranger. They became Ranger. And then the urban myth is that they printed 10,000 copies of Dawn Patrol with just the Ranger logo. And they still talk about it, and it's a good story.
It's a good story.
Listen, I've been buying Night Ranger albums for 40 years, whatever, 35 years. I got everything. I've never seen a Ranger logo. Now, the story is they printed 10,000 of them, figured out they have this other band, and they destroyed them all. So one of two things happened. Either they destroyed every single copy, 10,000, right? And you got to remember, Boardwalk Records is basically Casablanca. It's Neil Bogart. It's Bruce Byrd, who Bruce Byrd was with Kiss. I mean, he was a big guy with the solo records and, you know, Dynasty Unmasked. And we know that there wasn't very good quality control, right? You know, I mean, if you collect Kiss vinyl, there's all kinds of mistakes out there. So either all 10,000 copies were destroyed, or it never existed.
It's B. I think it never existed, but they got charged. Let's put it that way.
I heard that Ranger, the country Ranger, actually issued a cease and desist. I don't know if that's true, but I read that.
When we talked to Britt Gilmore, the Rangers were basically three brothers. They didn't know any of that story until we contacted them in 2020. There was never a cease and desist, anything like that. Their story is just crazy as well. I mean, just drugs and, you know, managers scamming them and stuff like that. But they didn't know anything about them. They weren't that big.
Gentlemen, who asked for water? Diane, bring the water in.
Very kind, Jack Blades. Nice to see you.
Again, great to see you.
Please introduce me around. Jeff, welcome back. Over here.
Fitzgerald Fitz.
Thank you, sir, very much. We'll come right here. Brad, welcome back. Thank you. And
Kelly Keggy on drums.
Hey, Kelly.
So we open the record with Don't Tell Me You Love Me. And Josh, I want to get your thoughts on this first. I would say, in my opinion, one of the best songs ever to intro a band to the world ever. Give me your thoughts on this song.
Listen, it's Night Ranger. they're the best band ever. I think you could put any song up there and I would agree with you, but I think yes. I mean, Don't Tell Me You Love Me, 1982. How many songs don't stand the test of time? 1982, you thought it was great. 2023, listen to it. Like,
well, you're going to be mad at me later because I'm going to share a couple with you.
But yeah, I mean, it still sounds fresh. It still sounds great. You're not embarrassed to, you know, crank it in front of your friends or anything. I mean, a lot of stuff from 1982, you can't say that on. And yeah, I mean, just being that your first single, your first track one of side A, you know, it's I think you're right, man. Sonny, you know, you may not really be from San Francisco, but you nailed this one.
And then Brent, I was thinking, right, think about Priest is already out there, Maiden's already out there, Scorpion's already out there. These guys, was it on purpose probably that they go, you know what, you're going to have to know what Brad and Jeff are all about right out of the gate?
I think you're absolutely correct, especially with Brad coming from Ozzy. They had to make a statement, and it is a statement tune from beginning to end. It hits you, but it's melodic and it's memorable, and the guitars are just wailing on it. Not to mention how great the keyboards complement the song on top of that. It's a well-crafted song, and for it to be the first time you're going to hear a band, it's not forgettable.
And Steven, you knowing you know, the kind of music I like, this could have been written by Sammy, right? Like, there's no chance this doesn't hit my ear right because of the way it's written, right? And so I remember from the first time I heard it, Steven, I was like, God damn, what the hell is that?
Yeah, it's literally the same impression that I think, well, all four of us had, and then anybody else that listened to it. For me, at the time in 1982, I'm a huge Maiden and Priest guy and Scorpions guy, like all three of those bands. All three bands have a dual guitar attack. So for these two guys to come on the scene, man, you took notice. I mean, that was the first thing that jumps out at you. The song is written by Jack Blades, and he sings it as well, but it's Jeff and Brad out front. It's the Jeff and Brad show. I mean, the melody's great on the song. It's memorable. I love this song, and it's my first introduction to Night Ranger, and that's what hooked me. I was in.
And I think that opening lick was something Jeff came up with. Like, he practiced, it was slower, and basically they sped it up, and that became that signature lick at the very beginning. And what's great, you know, again, with Sonny saying, you know, maybe the best opening to a record, is every member shines. You know, you got Jack singing, Kelly's just, you know, his drums are fantastic through it. Fitz has got his parts, you know, that part that kind of slows it down out of the solos. And then what's great is, you know, on some Night Ranger songs, you only get Brad doing a solo or Jeff doing a solo, but this, you get Brad at his best, and then when, you know, your ears are bleeding and you don't think you can take it anymore, all of a sudden Jeff jumps in and, you know, follows him. Great opening song.
Yeah.
Still stands the test of time.
So then we go to the second song, Sing Me Away. And Josh, for me, like, if you're going to have two singers, I guess I got to hear them right away. And so Night Ranger does a good job, and, you know, whether that's a record company, whether that's a producer that says, look, the first 8 minutes of your guys' life, everybody needs to hear what the two singers are going to sound like, and you need to hook in the guys and the women in two songs, and I think we got the two songs that can do it, and for me, Sing Me Away being the second song, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, Sing Me Away, you know, wasn't a major hit, but it's, you know, you go to a Night Ranger concert expecting to hear certain songs, and Sing Me Away is still one of those. Great story about when they wrote it was Jack and Kelly are working for a floral company that Jack's mother-in-law owns. They're at the San Francisco, maybe art gallery, right? And they got a big floral thing every year. And so, like, Jack and Kelly are going back and forth. Yeah, what if we do this? And what if we do this? And so Jack sits down on a chair, you know, to, like, tell Kelly more about it. And the chair's part of the museum, and it has an alarm on it. So the alarm goes off, the police show up, all because they were so into writing Sing Me Away and talking about it. A little history there. But yeah, you're right. You get Jack right off the bat, and then you get Kelly, who, you know, I think Kelly's very underrated as a vocalist. I mean, fantastic vocalist. And you get that, I guess, kind of like what Night Ranger's known for. You get Don't Tell Me You Love Me, hard rock. And then you get that, what they called stainless steel rock, right? Kind of like polished rock pop. And then, you know, Steve, you're talking about the dual guitars. That's one of the best dual guitar solos that they got in their catalog. Brad and Jeff, they're playing those solos. So, again, stands the test of time.
Yeah, and Brent, for me, like, it's almost even more pop rock of a chorus than
Absolutely.
Don't Tell You Love Me is, right? So you got to remember, it's end of 82, so you do got to hit the radio at some point, and this sounds like it's written for radio.
And what's fantastic is it shows the differences between the two singers. Right away, your first impression is Jack is going to be the heavy one. He's going to be, quote-unquote, Gene Simmons. You know, and Kelly is going to be the guy that's going to bring a different tempo in, a different style. And what I love so much about that song is, I mean, I love when you could sing the guitar parts. I love a great, memorable solo, but when the solo actually becomes part of the song, if you know what I mean.
I mean, I feel the same way. I know what Brent's saying is the solos are so memorable that you can almost sing them just like you would have.
It's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Stephen, what's interesting to me is for somebody like you who is also got Blackout, right? So you're listening to Don't Tell Me You Love Me. You're like, oh my God, this album's going to be awesome. My guess is your first listen, this song ain't awesome because you're like, well, wait a second. What the hell just happened? We just went soft here.
Well, no, that's not the case, because remember, my history, what got me to the Blackouts and the Van Halens was the AOR FM radio rock, right? The Foreigners and the bands like that. So that got me to where I was a hard rock, heavy metal head. So for me, a song like Sing Me Away, you still have the fat guitar riff that is out front, and they mixed the keyboards just right to where they're not overpowering the song. This is what I complain about so much today. It's like, I don't hate that you have a keyboard player in the band, as long as you mix the keys tastefully in the back of the guitar. I need to hear the guitar first. Sing Me Away, you hear the guitar first. It's out front. So, you know, Kelly Kagi wrote this song. Now, here's a tidbit of information that I'm going to confess up front to everybody. Remember, this is 1982 and everything's not visual. So I haven't seen Night Ranger in concert. I've only seen Don't Tell Me You Love Me. I didn't know that it was a different singer. I really didn't know that they had two singers for the longest time. I had no clue. You know, I mean, I can listen now and go, oh, yeah, okay, I see the difference in Kelly and Jack's voice. But back then, their voices, they weren't so different. It's not like, you know, it's not like Rod Stewart and, you know, I don't know, Rob Halford. You know what I mean? It's not so, their voices aren't that different. They meld very nice. They're very sort of clean. I mean, both their voices are fairly clean and melodic. So I never knew that they had two singers back then. I had no clue about it. And so, yeah, that's just, it's something. This is a song with a great melody, good mix of riffs. It's a great, I love calling it stainless steel rock. I mean, that's fantastic. That's perfect. That's what it is. Stainless steel pop rock.
Now, what I want to ask you guys is, as far as timeline goes, I was 13 years old. So I'm already listening to Loverboy at this point. And pop radio was a mixture of everything. So if you wanted to hear Bob Seger and Led Zeppelin, you're hearing all that on Top 40 radio. And so to hear Night Ranger, heavy, but yet with the pop-centric sound, it all made sense to me. So like when, you know, Sonny, you said, well, Stephen, for, you know, get coming off Blackout, you're hearing Sing Me Away, you know, he was expecting a different answer out of you. Are you in the same age bracket I was in at that time, or?
No, in 82, I was a sophomore in high school, so I'm in the middle. I'm in the middle of what I consider my grown-up rock years. So I'm 16 years old at this point. I'm cruising the mall with my friends, right? I got a buddy that drives. He's got a killer stereo in his car, and we're cruising the mall, cranking the stereo to 11 at this point on the weekends. So, you know, the point I was making is that I already loved stuff like Foreigner and that classic rock that was being played on the radio very heavily. Bands like Night Ranger, Maiden, Priest, they weren't really being played on the radio. These were These were bands I was discovering through magazines and going out and purchasing the albums. So I was in the height of purchasing Dawn Patrol and purchasing Screaming for Vengeance and purchasing Killers and things like this. But I also had Foreigner 4 and Head Games and et cetera.
I understand. Yeah. I was in my quote unquote coming of age era, part of my life at that point. But yeah, I was getting all that as well. My dad would buy the Foreigner 8-tracks and the REO Speedwagons, the Bostons, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, before I go to the next song, I'll tell you. So let's go to beginning of 86, right? So I'm a senior in high school, and I will tell you that the guys who love Iron Maiden do not like Poison.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who love Metallica don't like Scorpions anymore because Savage Amusement's out. Everybody loves YNT because from the Bay Area, and if you ask them about Night Ranger, they all say meh. Because of Sister Christian, right? So there's this divide starting to happen on there's the actual rockers, there's the actual metalheads, and then there's a bunch of people selling albums that nobody wants to like anymore because it's not cool, right? And that's kind of what's happening.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, and I never really thought about it until just now, but, you know, it is interesting to think about because, honestly, when I was in high school, and I,
long
like
time
I said,
ago, 1970.
Yeah, not 1970s, the 80s. The point is that I did love all this stuff. I came in on the Styx and Foreigner and Boston, yeah, and all this stuff that was on the radio. I discovered bands like Maiden and Priest through magazines and went and purchased albums. And, you know, even the early days of Metallica, which were the very beginnings of thrash. It was okay to like all that stuff. Like you were either that stuff all fell under the metal umbrella and you were either a metalhead or you weren't. And it didn't, you know, it was guitar oriented rock. And it was, if you did that, you were a head. What we called the heads, right? The potheads. If you did that, you were a head and you rocked, right? And it was all of that stuff. Somewhere down the line, and I can't pinpoint exactly when it was, maybe after glam, maybe right during that glam period of hard rock or something, somewhere there was a separation where you were either a really, you know, a heavy metal head, or you were too pretty and liked this other stuff, and it wasn't cool to like, you know, you either liked one or the other. I don't know where that division came in. Maybe with the invention of thrash metal. I don't know. But there was a division where there wasn't division before at one point.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
Look at all the people here tonight! Oh, man! I got to make an announcement right here. Can you hear me out there?
It's time to take a quick break in the action from this week's episode. Sonny and I just wanted to thank all of you, the listeners, for joining us each and every week. Whether you just found us today or have been listening for multiple episodes, we love your passion for music and rock and roll in general. We consider you all part of our Loud Minority family. Always remember, you can communicate with us a few different ways. If you don't mind Facebook, head over to the Growing Up Rock Loud Minority Facebook group and be part of the conversation. It's a private group, and all you have to do is ask to join, answer a few rock and roll questions, and you're in. If you despise Facebook, which many people do, then send us an email to growingupprock@gmail.com. We get everything there. You can follow us on Twitter and Insta at Growing Up Rock, which is one word, GROWINUPROCK. In the event you feel entertained by our podcast, we would appreciate it if you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode, and go leave us a 5-star review either at Apple Podcast or Podchaser. Now, back to our regularly scheduled program.
All right, let's get back. All right, so third track, we got At Night She Sleeps. And Josh, here's where, with Jax and Kelly's songwriting, simple things like musical accents after At Night She Sleeps, right? That little thing makes it instant radio doable. And that's magic.
Now listen, At Night She Sleeps, I love the song. I love Kelly's voice. But, you know, there's certain parts, like some of the keyboard parts that, you know, even when I was 7, I was like, eh, you know, you know, what's the part I hate? The
Scooby-Doo part. That's what Eric Levy calls it.
This is, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, where it's like, dun, 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 dun.
It's the techno pop. It's the techno pop.
It's very much of its time.
Yeah.
So to me, there's a couple songs that don't age well, but they're okay. I mean, their listeners are a shit ton worse. Yeah, to me, it's, you know, that's getting into a little bit of a weak spot, you know, but hey, if that's your weak spot on a record, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah. Brent, I thought it was interesting that after Sing Me Away, they come back with a chugging riff again. So it was like, hey, don't forget, we're still rock.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to get ahead of myself, because I normally do. The album is put together so well as far as song after song after song. Like, to Josh, this might be a filler track. To me, no. I love it. It's very much, like I said, of its time. It's what I would have heard on regular radio. They say, I think we even said it last night, you've got all your life to write your first album. What a hell of a first album this is, you know.
What what is it, The Night She Sleeps is a song that was from the first album. And there's a Cars kind of S keyboard in there. And because we were then rehearsing it, and we were like, oh my God, listen to that. And it's like, and we're like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. We remember doing this track. We never played it, I don't think, ever. It's flying. What it's doing to me, and not just me.
And Stephen, you can get an idea of Jack's got a little, you know, he shows the rock on that first song. You got Kelly that kind of shows a little bit of his soul on that second song. And to me on this one, Jack's got a little bite to him, which is nice for rock.
Yeah, look, all the stuff that Josh said that he hated, I actually like on this song. So I do agree with Josh in the fact that this song is very of the time. Written by both Jack and Kelly, and I guess Kelly sings on it. The song moves, but again, to me, has a great melody, has a good chorus. I like the chorus at the end with the keyboard interludes that go in and out. It keeps it interesting for me. And it's a little poppy, but it still rocks, you know? So again, as long as they're keeping the guitars there and out front for me, even whether they're intertwining some of these keyboard interludes or whatever, for me, it works. And it keeps me interested and it keeps me rocking. That's really all I care about. So I'm good with this song.
Next song we got is Call My Name. Josh, you know, you kind of get a little bit of Jack's softer voice here. Thanks to piano melody, thanks to the dynamics that the song's written by. And I kind of like Jack with that little softer voice a little bit.
This is one of the rare moments where me and Brent are in agreement. This is pretty much me, myself, and Brent's favorite song. You know, what's crazy is, you know, record labels never thought Jack had a top 40 voice. Rubicon, they didn't let him sing any of the hits. With Sister Christian, the label wanted Kelly to sing Sentimental Street and Goodbye, which were written by Jack. And that's why High Enough was like a personal feat for him, because it was able to say, hey, I can sing a top 10 hit. But I think we saw it with this song that he has the range to sing that softer stuff. And lyrically, it's one of my favorite songs. I mean, just starting out, you know, I hear a voice over the sound of the city, and with the piano playing, you know, it creates pictures in your head. It's a different Night Ranger song. It's hard to describe, but to me, it's probably my favorite Night Ranger song. And if it's not yours, I don't really want anything to do with you.
All right. Well, I guess I should hang up now.
So, Brent, here's my problem with the song.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who's got control of the mute button?
I don't need like a minute of Sounds of the City. I think it's stupid. I think it's stupid to hear the horns and the sirens and the. I'm just like, okay, why? I don't understand why it needs to be there.
That's because you grew up in San Francisco. Me growing up in Cincinnati, I needed it.
Listen, if you grew up in San Francisco, you would know that that's the sound of the city.
I know that's the sound of the city. I don't need it on tape.
Yeah, you heard that all the time. We didn't. I'm only recently discovering that in Cincinnati, you know.
Let me clue you two in that are new to this podcast, and this is your first visit. But Sonny doesn't like to waste a lot of time.
Now, I hate wasting time.
I look at it a little bit differently. I look at it as textures and mood settings, and so I don't mind a certain intro to a song here or there. I personally don't mind this section with the sirens and stuff. I think it builds the drama of the song, and I'll talk about that when Sonny calls on me. But yeah, Sonny has no time to waste, and this is wasteful when he calls my name. So
see, when I want Sounds of the City, I just roll down the window.
Well, this song is epic in every sense of the word, from the slow build. It just goes for the jugular, in my opinion. Not Metallica jugular, nothing like that. The lyrically, I think it's Jack at his finest. And then I love, after all that build up, it goes right back to the slow. It goes out the way it came in. And I just think it's a perfect song, perfect Nine Ranger tune.
To 80, we had demos out there. We recorded them many times with Sing Me Away, Penny. We recorded Eddie, Eddie's Coming Out Tonight. Some of the other harder rock songs that weren't hits from the first album, like Don't Tell Me You Love Me wasn't written yet. Sing Me Away was, but Sister Kristen had been written, but it wasn't on the first record. We kind of said, we had another song called Call My Name, which was actually something we actually liked better at that time. And so we recorded Call My Name as the ballad.
Steven, although I agree that Jack sang this well, don't get me wrong there, and Josh saying, he gets a chance to kind of show what he can do. But he mentioned, he showed what he could do in High Enough. Dude, a monkey could have sang with Tommy Shaw, and High Enough would have been a number one hit.
Right. You've never heard me sing.
Anybody could have sang with Tommy Shaw on High Enough, and it would have been a hit.
All right. Okay, so let me speak my piece of this. Sonny, you know I hate slow songs. I mean, Jesus Christ, this band was rocking. They were kicking my ass out of the gate. And then they get to this damn song and they slow it down. It's written by Jack Blades. It's sang by Jack Blades. 3 minutes and 42 seconds. Slowed down a bit. But, Sonny, I love it. It's a fantastic song. So they slow it down just a little bit, but it's not really a ballad to me. I'm not typically a lyrics guy, but I still found drawn into these lyrics because, as Josh pointed out, they paint a very good picture, which we'll find even further down in this album. Night Ranger does a really good job of painting a picture within a song. And I'll talk about that a little bit later on, but I like the lyrics. They still found a way to rock this song off. I like the dynamics in this song where it goes, you know, it goes from nice kind of calm, mellow to heavy and rocking. The bridge, I love the bridge right before the solo section. I think that bridge is fantastic, the way they build their way over to that solo section. And it just, I don't know if epic is the right word. I know that's what Brent used, but it's a 3:42 song. So epic is a little bit different to me, but it is a good tune and I do dig it. And I'm good with this song, even though it's slower, which normally I am not.
You know, this is a very big, like, point in your guys' podcast career. Because, like, what episode is this? Like, 390, 450, something like that. But this is the point where it's actually been proven that Steven is the brain.
Oh, my God, dude. Ooh. You don't listen enough. Because that dumbass thinks nothing under 7 minutes is epic.
That is probably the most spot-on critique I've heard. I mean, I'm amazed by it.
Wait till you hear me later. You're going to really be mad.
If I didn't know better, Steven, I would think you were from San Francisco.
There's a song later that, yeah. All right. Let's get back to it. So next song we got is Eddie's Coming Out Tonight. And Josh, can somebody explain to me who Eddie is? Who is Eddie?
Ooh.
Well, personally, Eddie Coming Out Tonight is my favorite song with the word trousers in it. You know, you don't get enough rock songs with the word trousers. So that's number one. If you listen, I think maybe Brent, 35 Years in the Night, I think it's recorded on there. Jack tells the story, and I might be meshing that story with,
He just recently told the story on Eddie Trunk, so you can tell me, and I'll tell you whether it's right, because he just told this.
There's a area in San Francisco, Sonny, I'll kind of school you a little bit on this, called the Tenderloin.
Yeah.
Okay. Small club, maybe held 50, 100 people. You know, he tells the story of Brad would walk on the tables and spill everybody's beer. But there was a guy who always showed up there, loved him. His name was Eddie. Didn't say much, always had beautiful girls with him. You know, they think he's, you know, probably doing, you know, in the illegal trade business of, you know, some, you know, burger candy or something. And, yeah, he was just some guy who was always there, kind of mysterious, that they was always at the shows and always had fun, you know, seeing them. So when Jack's writing a song, he kind of thinks of that. You know, you get some of the lyrics, always wears white and the tenderloin life, which, you know, as a 7-year-old, I think he likes tenderloin sandwiches or something. But again, that's an area of San Francisco. And so I think that's kind of the story. Now, again, how much of that is myth and truth and a good story? You know, that's to be determined. But that's where that Eddie story comes from.
And that is the story that he told to Eddie Trunk just literally like 2 weeks ago when I listened. He told that exact story. So I think that that's probably pretty accurate.
And what's unique, too, is you always kind of think of this as a Jack song. But, you know, Kelly's the first songwriter on it. I forget about that. You know, Kelly actually, you know, is the first songwriting credit on this and not Jack.
So, Brent, with Eddie Coming Out Tonight, and they do it later on, too. They do it again here in another song, too. But when there's a lot of words and Jack's got to kind of tell the story, I guess it's harder to be melodic in the verses. But then that whole he likes to rock, he likes to roll, like they got a way to put the hook in somewhere just in case we lost you here for a second. Come on back. There's a hook.
Yeah. Very singable. Hardest part for me was being 13 years old and not understanding what a tenderloin life was. And I convinced myself he was singing Tender Young Life.
Oh.
It wasn't until... gosh, 10 years ago, I found out about the Tenderloin District. I had no idea. But in any event, again, it paints a picture. And I think it's constructed very well. I love how, and, you know, we'll get with Steven here in a second because it's got that slow build at the beginning until that guitar kicks in. But no, it's a cool tune. It's many a fan's favorite off this record. I know that for certain.
Stephen, for me on this song, here's my problem with this song. I think you can know what it is. I love the guitar noodling. I love the guitar solos. Everybody's got to shut up during the guitar solo. Like, no backup shit, no underlying vocals, no fucking sirens, nothing. Everybody shut the fuck up during the guitar solo. You have the whole other song to do whatever the hell you want. It just bugs the fuck out of me when that happens.
Oh, he likes to rock.
Oh, dude, nothing about this song bothers me because this is a staple for me. This is absolutely one of my favorite Night Ranger songs of all time. That intro into that big fat ass riff. I love the lyrics. And again, I'm not a big lyric guy. They paint a picture, as I've said before, this is going to be a theme. They do this very well in this song. This, I can picture this guy. I picture this guy in white. I think he's a pimp with nose candy. That's what I think this guy is. And that's for real. The outro solos and the harmonies coming out of this song, the guitar harmonies coming out in the outros. Wow. Holy crapola. These two guys, man, they cemented themselves, Watson and Gillis, on this song. For me, they cemented themselves. What a way to close out side one of my cassette. Man, this was killer for me. I absolutely love this song still to this day. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so we flip the record over, and the first song we have is Can't Find Me a Thrill. And, Josh, I like the song. It's just the chorus is not the most dynamic chorus on the planet. Like, it's a little boring compared to some of these other songs.
I'll agree with you somewhat. I think with Can't Find Me a Thrill, it's a song I've always enjoyed. I think it's like the gritty. It's more one of the more gritty songs. I mean, you know, cocaine and women, they treat you the same. Like, yeah, I'm 6 years old, and I'm like, that's shit I need to know, you know?
They're both about the same price, too.
I don't need to know Sing Me Away and all that stuff. I need to know that cocaine and women are going to treat me the same. And I learned early, I liked how women treated me. So cocaine's got to be the same way, right? You know, eventually, you know, you find out, no. But, to me, the song has always sounded thin, like production-wise, where, you know, you talk about Eddie, right? And you talked about that heavy, crunchy riff. And you talk about, you know, the last track of the record, Night Ranger, or Don't Tell Me You Love Me. It's thick. And to me, Can't Find Me a Thrill, as much as I love it, has always just had a thin sound to it. Now, I rank it above Eddie's Coming Out Tonight just because they don't use the word trousers. but
that should rank it below right there.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the chorus. I think, you know, it falls a little bit below some of the other songs. But again, if this is one of the songs that falls below, you've got a pretty good record. But to me, like I said, I've always enjoyed it. And yeah, Sonny's probably going to say something else that makes me mad.
No, not on this song. Brent, on this one, I like also, and they do this in a few songs, where under the verses, there's like this dual guitar melody going, right? And that works. That, to me, enhances the song. When the singer's talking or somebody's talking, when somebody's doing a guitar solo, that pisses me off. But this part makes me happy.
I love that pisses you off. I love that. You know, flip it over to side two. I can tell you right now, this is Jack's side for me. Jack wins on every level. But this song is your standard rocker. It's not really painting a picture. It lets you, we've talked about it on our show. It doesn't sound bad. Everything about it for me is good. It works. And anytime that Jeff and Brad are doing the dual guitar, it's magic for me.
And then, Steven, you get a live type ending to the song because you got to have it because Brad and Jeff are absolutely going off. Yeah. So you can't really like fade out.
So for me, Can't Find Me a Thrill and Eddie's Coming Out Tonight, I always felt like we're sort of like brother-sister songs simply because one ends side one and one starts side two. And it's not that the songs sound the same, but they both have that big fat riff. And so these songs are a little bit more... let me think of the right word. These songs are a little bit more just sort of straight ahead standard hard rock. There's nothing really particularly different about them, but I love them because I'm a guitar riff kind of guy. So when this song kicks off, I love the fat riff. I love the way that Night Ranger smooths out those verses and melodies, but they still have the big riffs that keep them in the hard rock world, right? So they have that ability to smooth those verses and melodies out with their voices. Like Josh mentioned, Cocaine and Women, they all treat you the same. That's fantastic information. Duly noted as a 16-year-old. And then, again, another killer solo on this song. I mean, it's just this album is chock full of killer solos. So Can't Find Me a Thrill is another favorite of mine. I really like this kind of rock and roll. So it works for me.
So then we get to the next song, Young Girl in Love. And Josh, here's, later on, it actually proves true. But now going back to this first record, and I'll end up saying this over and over in the next 12 months, there's three Night Rangers to me. There's the rocking Night Ranger, there's the ballad Night Ranger, and there's the movie soundtrack Night Ranger. And to me, this is the movie soundtrack. Now, I love all three. I'm not taking shots at any of them. But this could have easily been the title song to a major motion picture in 1982. And it just missed out, unfortunately.
Well, I think you bringing this up as a third part of Night Ranger, and this is the first song you mentioned it, this song is different from these other songs because this was a song that originated with Stereo. So this song and a song we're going to talk about coming up were the two songs that were from Stereo, which was kind of more new wave. So it's got a unique sound. And Night Ranger, along with a lot of bands from that era, you know, had that, you know, they would do that movie soundtrack, get that going. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. And this was the third single off the record. Didn't do much, but I think the best part about that is this song is Kelly's vocals really stand out. It's a little bit more popish. It's kind of fits in with like maybe At Night She Sleeps, you know, rocks, but it's got a little bit of a pop element to it. Definitely a lot more than At Night She Sleeps, but that pop element comes from everybody was trying to be the Cars and Blondie and, you know, the Knack, and they were trying that. And they, you know, did that for about 6 months. And this is one of the two songs that still remain from those Stereo days.
Yeah. And Brent, that what Josh is saying completely makes sense to me because this does sound like the Cars. And I do like the Cars. And they could have had a major hit with this. But I guess you can't be everything to everybody. You can't be rocker and be techno pop. You can't be both. Brent, you like pop rock stuff like this?
I love perfect pop tunes, period. There's only two kinds of music, good music and bad music, as far as I'm concerned. And that's what I love about Night Ranger because, you know, I even say there's a fourth element, their pop-centric side. You know, when they want to be pop, they're pop. And for this, for the money, it's great. What I really love about good pop songs is like when Kelly's singing and you got the guys answering him. And, you know, like when they, you can come crying to me. See, I can't sing with Tommy Shaw. But I love when songs, when the band, they'll have an answer. You know, when the singer sings something, the guys will come in with their own chorus with the answer. I love that kind of stuff. And it's just a good, fun song. Paces itself from beginning to end perfectly. And yet, has a kick-ass guitar solo in it. Make up your mind, you're reaching all of my time.
And Steven, when I was listening to this the other day, I'm like, God, like, this could have been Footloose. It could have been Eye of the Tiger. Like, you sell this to the right movie, everybody on the planet hears this song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think arguably this is the most pop tune on this record, in my opinion. To me, it sticks out from the rest of the songs. I like the chorus with the sequenced keyboards running in the background. They have that sequencing program running the keyboard in the background of the course. I love the bridge into the solo. I mean, it's not a skipper for me. I like the song. I just think that it's arguably the most pop song on this record. This one, to me, where a song like Sing Me Away is Stainless Steel pop rock, and even Call My Name is sort of has like flavors of ballady, and At Night She Sleeps, we said, is very sort of dated. This tune just is straight up pop to me. And again, I like it.
All right, so then we get to the next song, Play Rough, and let me piss off Josh here real quick.
Oh, no.
I don't buy it. If Jack's trying to be angry or lustful, I'm sorry. I don't buy it.
All right. Number one, any song that can have the line, you can carry on like an ice machine, it's fucking art.
But you gotta still sell it.
Dude, it's sold, man. It's platinum. Listen, for a first record, to have a song heavy like that to fill in between all the hits you play is a good song to have. You know, listen, I still enjoy it. Yeah, you know, if I was Pat Glasser, I may be like, hey, you know, can we change that ice machine line? I mean, I get it. You know, the older I get, like, you know, you think about stuff like that. Like, hey, you know what? A refrigerator and an ice machine, those things just run and run. And, you know, man, that's pretty amazing. But, you know, I don't know how cool of a rock line it is. But listen, I think it fits well. I think it fits better than some of the other songs, Young Girl in Love or, you know, Night She Sleeps. But I don't have any problem with it. I like the acoustic, you know, guitars at the beginning, which you don't hear a lot of acoustics on that first record. I don't even know if you hear it at all, besides that, you know, where Night Ranger, you know, the acoustics start to play a bigger part throughout their career, Let Him Run, you know, Goodbye, and some of the other songs, you know, Reason to Be, off Main Emotion, the first part's acoustic. So, yeah, so that's the first part, really, you hear Jeff Watson acoustic playing, but I think it fits, Sonny, man. I think it's a good song. I buy it, man. Jack's a badass.
Brent, my other problem is the acoustic. The song is called Play Rough. Okay? Come on, dude. You wasted 16 seconds of my life.
Listen, I'll handle this. All right. Listen, that's what it is, man. The acoustic is the, you know, it's the nice where you're with the girl and you're telling you, you know, I love you and I'll do anything. And,
on a song called, you know, Play Rough. I'm with a girl and telling her I love her.
After a while, it's like, listen, I ain't none of that I love you stuff. I'm here to take what I want. Damn it, I'm Jack Blades.
Now, what Steven said is I agree with a lot. I love guitar riffs. And the other thing I love in songs is are chugs. Chug, 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 chug. I love a good chug. And this
I love
song,
a good tug too. Oh, you said chug. My bad.
You know, and it's just it's aggressive. I buy everything it's selling. I mean, you got to consider, you know, Josh, you were too young, but back in 1983, we didn't call girls ice machines; we called them freezers. So, you know, ice machine sounds phonetically better in the song than you can carry on like a freezer. Well, you don't buy the acoustic part is even rough sounding. It's not pretty, you know. It's setting it up to just like as soon as you hear it, you're like, oh my god, it's just a cool, it's a good tune. It's one of my favorite Jack tunes.
Now listen, let's get Steve's opinion because listen, I don't know if you guys
he's going to say man.
But he talked about Call My Name, and that was his – he peaked right there in all 800 episodes you guys have had. And I think he can do it again.
He likes jugs.
He likes jugs. Yes. All right, Steven, go ahead.
All right, Play Rough. Here's my notes on Play Rough. I like the nice guitar intro into the huge riff. I think it's fine. It's compliments, short. It leads right into that big, huge riff. And it's another great solo. I like Play Rough. It's not a skipper for me at all. And that's about it. That's all I have to say about it.
Listen, Lord, you know, you didn't think he would do it again, but he did.
He did.
My Lord, he is just, he's like the George Brett.
You know, Play Rough reminds me of Kiss's Rock Bottom, except where the intro to Rock Bottom goes on a little too long.
Yeah, minute and a half.
Play Rough gets it just right. Yeah. They get it just right.
Yeah, this one's nice and short. Yeah, yeah.
pleasure. You're busting out your seams. You can play it loose, or you can play it tight. Make the boys sweat on a Saturday night. Oh yeah, you're the talk of the neighborhood. You're saying something bad, saying something good. You can carry on like an ice machine, or you can give it up to me. So you wanna play rough tonight? It's all in the way that you roll the dice. You wanna play rough tonight? Better think once, better think twice. You can raise the eyes, I can let you go.
All right, so then the next song we got is Penny. This will make Josh happy. I'm at work today. You know, I've been listening to this album on and off in entirety for about a month now. And I'm at work today, and I'm walking to go talk to somebody, and I'm humming something. You know how, like, you'll be humming something, and you're like, what the hell am I humming, right? And, well, what was that? Penny, I got you, know, you're so easy to read. That's what I just hummed that. Over and over and over. That little lick, Josh, is fucking awesome.
Penny is the one other song that's from Stereo. So yeah, Penny and Young Girl in Love were two Stereo songs. I think we were talking maybe off air. Johnny Cola from Huey Lewis in the News, who was in the last incarnation of Rubicon, actually demoed a few songs with Stereo, and that was one of them. So there's a recording out there with Johnny Cola actually singing that track. I like the riff from Penny, and it's, again, if that's one of your worst songs on your record, that's a good thing. To me, I just don't like, you know, like, even in 1982, you know, I'm 7 years old, and I'm like, who the fuck's still named Penny? You know, you might as well just be singing a song about a girl named Ethel. Right? Like, there's no one named Penny. There's no one named Ethel. I just didn't like that. Now, our third host, Andy, proved me wrong, because in the 80s, he got married to a girl named Ethel.
In the 90s, not in the 80s.
All right. So there's a girl out there, you know, of age in the 90s named Ethel. But that's just really what got me, was I just didn't like the name Penny, right? For a song. You know, it's like, there ain't no girl breaking your heart named Penny, right? Name it Jessica, Rachel. Those are heartbreakers, right? And interestingly enough, I've met Penny, who Jack wrote the song about, was a family friend of Molly, his wife. Met her last year. Great person, interesting person, but I still don't like the song.
Brent, it's better than Shandy. Penny's better than Shandy.
Oh, I don't think so.
That's true. That's true.
I don't think so. See, my bias against Penny was when I was in eighth grade, a girl named Penny Elliott liked me, and I didn't like Penny Elliott. And then the song came out, and I'm like, it didn't remind me of her. The older I've gotten, it's funny, because it was when I finally, I had my wife's phone, and Night Ranger was here 15 years ago. And our other host, Andy, couldn't make it to the show. And they said, we're going to play a deep cut for you tonight. And I'm like, oh, yes. And they're like, they go into Penny. And I'm like, I'm emailing Andy. You ain't going to fucking believe this. They're playing Penny. But it's good. It's a good tune. The chorus is fun. I had to separate myself from 1983 and a girl in my health class. I had to get rid of that, and I finally came to terms with it. And yeah, it's just a good little pop tune.
There ain't no girl named Penny breaking anybody's hearts.
Yeah,
Steven, to me, this is movie soundtrack Night Ranger. This could have been in the movies. I love it.
I agree with you.
All right, so let's start off with this. Both the Night Ranger guys are wrong. Okay. First of all, there's something to what Sonny said. I want it to jump in because Sonny doesn't read my notes, and I certainly don't read his. But my notes are another great riff for this tune. I think the chorus is simple, but I always seem to get it stuck in my head. So that says something, because Sonny basically said the same thing, whereas he finds himself humming this song. It is really a simple chorus, but for whatever reason, it absolutely works. I love this song. I think this song is great. And guess what, Josh? When I grew up, I grew up with a girl named Penny, and she was super cute and super just kind of slutty, and I absolutely loved it.
Well, I would have loved it too.
You are incorrect in saying there's no Pennies, because that is not true.
To me, I guess you're only holding out on me. I telephone, never ever home, and every time I call, it drives me up the wall. It's crazy to me. I took you to see all the stars in the sky. You took me by surprise. There isn't a doubt that what you're talking about.
Josh, she didn't break his heart. Look at him. Is this story even believable?
She didn't carry on like an ice machine, so yeah. God.
Steve knew a Penny, and Sonny's from San Francisco. Man, you guys are just all kinds of lines. But it's interesting, though, Sonny, you just say, you know, movie soundtrack and the other song you describe, Young Girl in Love, and both those songs are from Stereo.
Yeah, yeah.
So those both originate, you know, from, you know, the same source, that Stereo era.
Yeah.
And Penny, the opening riff, I love the riff. I just, you know, it don't take much for me to turn on a song, and obviously the word trousers and the name Penny just don't do it for me.
All right. So then we come to the last song, Night Ranger. Josh, is that Jack rapping in the musical interlude? Is that him rapping?
Are you talking at the beginning there?
No, in the middle.
Oh, no, like where it kind of speeds up?
Yeah, he's almost rapping.
Listen, man, that brother's got soul in him. Of course he's rapping, right? Listen, if you listen to them old Temptation tracks and you hear that knuckle cracking, that's Jack, I tell you. You know, I'll let Steve decide if that's rapping or not, but... You know, this is a song where they got their name. The song was written before they were called Night Ranger. They were called Ranger. They had the song Night Ranger. They had to come up with a different name. They had a few other names that were considered. And eventually they decided, well, we got this song Night Ranger. Why don't we use that as the name? I don't think all of them were on board with it, but that's what came to be. And Jack then followed tradition with Damn Yankees. Hey, if I got a band name, you know, I gotta have a song. So Damn Yankees' first record has a track called Damn Yankees. This is a song that for the last probably at least 10 years has been played at almost every concert. And, you know, it's even before that, it was usually, you know, in the set list. Sometimes they would take it out for Eddie. This is a song where if you go see them live, they do the extended 5-man drum solo in it. I think Brent actually did a deep dive and determined that there's 8 crickets chirping at the beginning. I thought there was probably more, but that's just how that's how dedicated we are on that Fans of Motion Night Ranger podcast. Go check it out.
Now, I only knew how many crickets were in it because I'm a drummer. So I would have to count the crickets and come in on it.
But, you know, I think one of you guys referred to maybe another song being kind of like brother and sister. I always considered this song to be kind of like the sister song to Eddie, right? They both close out each side. They're both bombastic. They build up to these great guitar solos with Brad and Jeff both, you know, wailing. Yeah, this song just, it's got everything. It got that build up. You know, it dies down, and then kind of where you said they're rapping it, you know, it kind of builds back up and goes into a little bit of maybe double time. Yeah, it's just a great song to end the record, and it still sounds fresh. I mean, you can still put that on today and put it up against anything, and it still competes. It still sounds good. Yeah, I mean, it's better than Penny.
Brent, you said you were a drummer, and I was never a musician. I wanted to be one. I wasn't good enough to be one. But I loved the bands that kept it simple so you felt like you could do it, right? Like, I'm not a Rush fan. Rush didn't sound doable to me, right? But stuff that Night Ranger and Kiss was doing felt doable. It's like, oh, I could go write that. Now, in the end, yeah, you can't just go write that. But this chorus is just so simple and just melodic and easy that they make the simple sound great.
Yeah, and plus it has chugs in it. It's just a fun tune. It's different than all the other tracks, but yet familiar with all the other tracks because of you saying, yeah, he's just singing fast, but I love the tempo change of the song, and then all of a sudden dun-dun-dun, and it goes right back into it again, and the Fitz complements it perfect with that little keyboard. Dun-dun-dun. It just works so well together.
Yeah, Steven, where I feel bad for these guys is Brad and Jeff are just never really talked about as this super guitar duo because the songs are so pop, rock, catchy that you just never hear about them in rock circles, it feels like.
Yeah, and that's criminal in my opinion. Look, this song has been in the set now lately for a while. It seems like every time I've seen them lately, they've played this song. And I like the groove of it. I love the crazy pace pickup at the end. The solo, again, is crazy. But honestly, I'd much rather they take this out and bring back Eddie's Coming Out Tonight, for me personally. Like, I'm good. I need them to switch up the set list a little bit because that's a big thing. Like, I hear Brent say something like, oh, yeah, you know, they pulled out Penny Penny as a deep track or something. And that's one thing that I'm like severely missing with them lately. the amount of times I've seen them. Like I just, there's so many, they've got so many great songs, and I really wish like they would start rotating some things in and out, because I'm missing a lot of stuff. It's a great way to close out the album. It's another not skipper for me. And so, yeah, it's a good tune.
All right. So I want to get everybody's top two, bottom two. Yes, you have to pick a bottom two. And your kind of final thoughts on the record. I'll start. My top two, Don't Tell Me You Love Me and Young Girl in Love. I love Sing Me Away, but Young Girl in Love, dude, there is, that song just did not get the chart love that it needed to get. And Don't Tell Me You Love Me is an iconic song. My bottom two was easy. Play Rough, I don't buy it. And Can't Find Me a Thrill, just the chorus was kind of boring to me. My final thoughts on the album, it's a great debut album. I would put Don't Tell Me You Love Me up against Welcome to the Jungle as a song that introduces a band to the world as just as good, if not better. It's not my favorite Night Ranger album. A lot of the songs do make playlists of mine. I would say about half the album makes playlists of mine. But as they come into like Big Life and they're bringing back more of almost the movie soundtrack feel of Secret of My Success and all that, I actually get more into them as people are probably getting out of them because they're not as rock anymore. I'm actually getting more into them. So, and that's just where I kind of stand with Night Ranger. Josh, give me your top two, bottom two, and final thoughts on the record.
Well, I'm tempted to say my top two are Play Rough and Can't Find Me a Thrill, just for spite. But my number one's real easy. Call My Name. You know, just to me, that's, you know, and it's not overplayed. You know, it's not on the greatest hits and everything like that. So it's, you know, you can still listen to it when you want, and, you know, not like Sister Christian when it's on all the time. And Don't Tell Me You Love Me. I mean, how can you go wrong with that? Yeah, those are, you know, to this day, that's just still an iconic song, and it never gets tiring. I think, you know, my final thoughts on the record is it's a debut album that still stands strong 40 years later. You know, even the album cover, right? Not that it was great in 1982 or whatever, but the thing is, in 2023, it doesn't suck, right? That's, you know, you look back on album covers you thought were cool when you were 16, and now you look back and like, what the hell was I thinking? You know, it's simple. It's great. The album, you know, all the songs are good.
Bottom two.
Oh, I got to do bottom two?
You got to do bottom two.
That's easy. Let's do At Night She Sleeps and probably Young Girl in Love. You know, just, I hope Kelly doesn't listen to this. But those are my bottom two. But yeah, just 40 years later, this album still stands strong, and every song is good. You know, where I don't like Young Girl in Love, you know, Sonny, you know, from San Francisco, it's in his top. And that's what makes, you know, good albums good is, you know, you got a problem if we're all naming the same top two songs and the same bottom two songs. And I guarantee, you know, it's not going to be the case, except for Brent. His number one is going to be Call My Name. Just, you know, letting y'all know.
All right, Brent, top two, bottom two, final thoughts.
Top two, Call My Name and Sing Me Away. Sing Me Away is, I never tire of hearing that song live. It's always got to be the second or third song in the set. It's just fantastic, dude. Bottom two would be Penny and Young Girl in Love. Final thoughts. I've often said this album for me is a perfect album. So for those to be my bottom two, doesn't mean they suck. It's just they got to fall somewhere in the ranking. But I think it's one of those debut albums for me that are it's magical by a band that you hear and you like pretty much every track that you hear on it. And like you said, be introduced to the world with two fresh and upcoming guitar players, guitar heroes, I should say. I stand corrected, I apologize. Really good, solid album, really good, solid band. Great band. I'm done.
Steven, your top two, bottom two, final thoughts?
My top two are Eddie's Coming Out Tonight and Can't Find Me a Thrill. Those are the two biggest rockers on the record. And it's just, they may be the more simplistic songs, but I love them. I love the riffs. My bottom two, and personally, I'll just say this up front. There are no skippers on this record for me. This record is a Desert Island record for me. It was my first Night Ranger record. I love it to this day. I've listened to this record probably 20 times in the last month getting ready for this episode. And it, up until that point, it had been, you know, quite some time since I listened to the record from start to finish. And it just, it made me realize how much I really love this record. My bottom two, and again, it's just my bottom two off this record. They're not skippers for me, but Night Ranger and Young Girl in Love are my bottom two. Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, my thoughts on the record is it's a Desert Island record. I love it.
Hey, Hollywood, you know what time it is. Let's connect it to Kiss.
You wanted the best, but you got the best. The hottest band in the world, Kiss!
So it's late 1982. Kiss has just finished recording Creatures of the Night album. Basically, they Frankensteined all the guitar parts together because Ace wasn't involved. We already know that. He didn't play lead on or guitar in any of the recordings. They'd already begun struggling with finances since 1979. So they're trying to figure out how to keep Ace from telling people that he's leaving. So they do a whole promotion tour for the album with Ace being involved. Before they start the tour, though, but at the end of December, they got to go find a guitar player. And remember, it's 1982, so thanks to Eddie Van Halen and Scorpions and Priest and Maiden, they feel like they got to get a shredder. So they basically settle on Vinnie Vincent because can't decide on anybody and they're running out of time. They're in rehearsals. They're trying to figure out what new songs they want to add to the set list. And they settle on this song. They rehearse the song. Get it down pat. Play it two times. And then never play it again for 41 years. Here is Keep Me Coming. Brent, you're a Kiss fan. Tell me what you think about Keep Me Coming.
It's everything to a 13-year-old coming into his own lyrically. I mean, it's not something I wanted to sing around my daughters as they were growing up, but, you know, it's Paul Stanley poetry is how I would call it. I know what you're like. You're not sleeping at night. Come on. You know it's going to go somewhere even worse after that.
So, Josh, Night Ranger has Sister Christian on the shelf, waiting for the next record, and Paul is writing Keep Me Coming.
What is it? With each little bite, I know you're ripe. Oh, come on.
You're thinking maybe you'll stay.
that seems to be on people's, you know, headstones and shit. If I remember correctly, I think this was the last song written for the album. I think that's been out there somewhere. again, like Brent said, I think, you know, when you're a teenager, you know, fuck yeah, you know, that's, yeah, girls, broads, you know, that's right, keep me coming. Yeah, when you're, you know, slightly balding, you know, 45-year-old, you're, you know, it doesn't quite hit the ears the same way. But this was a song that Kiss needed. You know, you're coming off of Unmasked, and then you're coming off The Elder, and obviously you're going in the wrong direction. You need to get back to basics and write songs, you know, about banging broads. And how basic can you get it than Keep Me Coming, right?
Yeah, it says in the title.
You know, I think it was a song, you know, they needed. They needed to get back to the basics. And what's Kiss, you know, always been about? Yeah, it's not my favorite track on the record, but I don't dislike it. Anything with Vinnie Vincent is good, right?
No.
No.
Steven, your thoughts on Keep Me Coming?
I dig it. I like the riff and the groove. I love the change in the pre-chorus. The chorus itself is sort of meh, but I guess it's okay. I like this tune. It's one of the tunes I dig off this record. I like this record as a whole, but I like this song. So that puts a capper on this debut Night Ranger record. Month one is in the books. Brent and Josh from Fans in Motion podcast, thank you so much for adding your colorful insight to this this first record. We appreciate you guys joining us on this episode. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Fans in Motion podcast, check out Brenton, Josh, and Andy, and any other folks that they have on that podcast from time to time. If you want to know Night Ranger, their podcast is all about Night Ranger. Sonny, is there anything that you want to add before we get up on out of here?
No, thanks for listening. And Josh and Brent, thanks for joining us today.
All right. Until next week. See ya.
Later.
That's the show. So let's shuffle, rattle, and roll us out of here. Until next week. Always remember, peace, love, and rock and roll. Can help out the podcast greatly by leaving us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Spotify. The links are in the show notes, or just drop us a line at our email, growinguprock@gmail.com. Growing Up Rock is a proud member of the Pantheon Network. Pantheon is the place for music lovers. Check us out, along with many other great music podcasts, on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.